it's really kind of neat that, you know, we all knew growing up you had a little bit in Arizona come spring training and a lot in Florida. And you just made a comment to us as one of the best facilities you've ever been to. Kind of share with us a few stories about the ones that you frequented in Florida.
Well, it was interesting because when I went to the Angels, we trained in Palm Springs. And so that's pretty good. The facility wasn't that good, but it was a pretty good place to train. And so then when I left and went to the Astros, we went to Cocoa Beach. And really, it was Cocoa. And we had an old green barracks and an old green stadium. And the stadium had been condemned, and so it was really a bad facility. Then we went to Port Charlotte. But I think between Cocoa and probably Pompano Beach were the two worst facilities I ever saw. And I tell people to this day, of all the baseball fields I've ever seen, Pompano is the only place I ever saw St. Augustine grass. And it's the only field that I've ever saw that had St. Augustine grass. And that was a major league facility. It was hard to believe.
You took such pride in keeping yourself in great shape and working on, you know, and being able to pitch so long. How have things changed in spring training when you were young with the Mets in 69 and as you went along to where they are now? Because it was spring training back then was getting into shape. Now you're in shape all year.
Well, you see, because players, the type of money they make now, it used to be when I got to the big leagues, every winter I went home because I didn't get paid and I had to get a job. And the first year I was in the major leagues, I worked at a service station and I'd go to school until 3. And then I would go to the service station, and I'd work from 3 till 9 and close the station. And that's what I did in the off season, waiting for spring training to come around. And then the next year, I went to school again, and I installed central heat and air conditioning. And that was the job I had. And you know, you had to get out and hustle. But nowadays, players make enough money, they don't have to work, and now you have workout facilities everywhere, which we didn't have in those days. There weren't gyms and things of that nature, and if weather was an issue, then like a lot of players that lived up north, they came to spring training to get in shape. And now players come in and they're in shape, and to me, what they should be trying to accomplish is whatever aspect of the game they need to improve on, and they have a 6-week period there to work on it. So it definitely is a different mindset, and it gives a player an opportunity to take advantage of the new situation in a sense.
Now, I had Stan Kasten as our president when I was with the Washington Nationals, and he sent me a text, and he was talking about how good of a bargain you must have got on the Texas Rangers after yesterday.
That's amazing, isn't it? You know, you always marvel at the price that these franchises bring. And obviously, you know, everybody knew the Dodgers in that situation was going to bring a premium. But did we really think it was going to bring something of that magnitude? No.
Yeah. You think that Magic Johnson, I've never known him to be a baseball fan. At least I've never heard anything about him being baseballish, just all basketball. Is have you talked to him since this, or ever talked to him?
No,
before?
I never have. I've never come in contact with him at all, and so I don't know what role he will play besides an investor, you know. But I think that obviously they have plans of what they want to accomplish over there, and I think there's going to be some money invested in the stadium, and so I think it's. It's probably going to be a good opportunity to be with the Dodgers.
We're speaking with Nolan Ryan of the Texas Rangers here on 105.3 The Fan. The Brooklyn Dodgers left and went to the Dodgers in L.A. They've been there for a while. Now Magic Johnson. Were they going to change the uniforms to purple and gold now?
I tell you what, they have one of the true traditional uniforms.
Right?
I sure hope they don't change anything about it because, you know, when you see them and the Cubs and the Boston and the Yankees, you know, the tradition of baseball has been there forever, and the same way with the Cardinals.
Well, look, growing up again, it was the home whites and the gray away. And now you guys got, what, 19 different jerseys?
Well, now we've cut down. When I came here, you know, we had cutoffs and we had all kind of stuff. And I said, you know, that's just too many. And so what we do is on the road we wear our grays or our blue tops, and at home then we can wear white, red, or blue. And so we've cut it down considerably, And I think he should try to be more of a traditional uniform and pick what you think is your uniform and stick with it.
Now, 4 years ago, the Rangers were kind of seen as, by a lot of national media and even by local media, as a franchise you didn't want to take what they were doing and implement it in other organizations. It wasn't working in Texas for a while. Now here we are, and you see all the articles saying, this is the organization you need to follow. They've put together a plan, and it's worked, and it's working, and they are real close to being kind of like what the Atlanta Braves were in the 90s. What have you seen so different from this organization being a part of it than you have as a player and then as a front office guy?
Well, I think what we decided a few years ago was that we need to be more of a balanced organization, put as much emphasis on pitching and defense as we did on offense. And when I came here, we were an offensive ball club. We'd score somewhere between 8 and 12 runs a night, and it was going to be who outslugged who. And we were going through our bullpen, and our starters weren't getting past the fifth inning. And by all-star break, our bullpen was worn out. And then I just knew that wasn't going to work. And people viewed our ballpark as a ballpark that you couldn't pitch in. And so we felt like we just needed to change that. And so that's what we did. And each year our ERA is continuing to come down, and our guys are pitching well and having success. So I think, obviously, pitchers view pitching in Arlington differently now. Joe Nathan came to us as a free agent, and we used to not be able to attract a free agent pitcher. And so I think there's a definite attitude change about Arlington and about the ballpark and about the Texas Ranger organization.
Tell me about the bringing of Greg Maddux here, because it's so neat with Mike Maddux doing a terrific job, you being the iconic pitcher and power pitcher that you were. Now you bring Greg Maddux, and he's kind of the paint your corners, the soft stuff. What kind of conversations did you and Greg Maddux had about the pitching staff you have here?
Well, I haven't had a lot of conversation with him this spring because he's been really busy, and I have too. But I know that the pitchers are enjoying being around him. They enjoy working with him on the backfields, and he has a real passion for filling your position and doing the things that you can do to help yourself win a ball game. And so we felt like that was a real positive message, and he was probably the guy to deliver that message and try to instill that in our young pitchers and on pitchers on the major league level. So I think that what we're starting to see is a little different change in mindset on that. And I know when I was with the Astros, years ago, we had a bunting coach that came in, and that's all he did the whole spring was work on bunting. And all of a sudden, the pitching staff took a lot of pride in being able to sacrifice and do the things to help themselves win ball game. And we led the league many years in sacrifice bunts. And so that can become contagious among your players, and I think that's what we're starting to see. Because of Greg and his attitude and the way that he works with these kids.
Yesterday was a pretty big day, I think, for some guys trying to compete for some bullpen spots that were still open. And, some guys had decent days, others not so much. Last year you opened up with Rhodes and Oliver in the bullpen, two lefties out of the seven guys. Are you guys looking at wanting to have two lefties in the bullpen to break camp, or does that not matter?
Well, ideally, you'd like to have two left-handers. You'd like to give Ron that option to be able to go to a left-hander in a tight situation, even if it's to get one guy out and not burn your one left-hander where you may use him later in the game. And so, yeah, you would like to have two, but it's not a necessity. But if you ask me to design how I would like to break camp, yeah, I'd like to have two left-handers, but I'd like to have two left-handers that I felt like were throwing strikes and that we had the confidence that in a tight situation Ron could go to them. So it's still up. There's it's going to be competitive down to the last game or two, and this is kind of crunch time for certain people on the roster because each outing is very important to them, whether they make the ball club or they end up going to Round Rock.
Speaking with Nolan Ryan on 105.3 The Fan, Neftali Feliz, we know what he did in the bullpen, looking to make him a starter. Scotty Feldman looked really good the other day. leaning towards the number five guy? Is Feliz still your guy? Because Feldman showed pretty well.
Feldman's had a really good spring. Feldman's very versatile. You know, we have given Feliz the opportunity to start, and, you know, he had a little bit of a shoulder problem that was a setback. He pitched last night over in a minor league game against Kansas City in the first two innings. He wasn't real sharp. The last two innings, he threw better. So I think if he comes in healthy, I think that he'll be in that slot to continue his rotation. And so I would anticipate that he would be the fifth starter in our rotation.
Do you think he's mentally ready to roll if he's the fifth starter, if things don't start out well?
Well, you know, it's going to be a different role than he's in, and he's going to have to approach it differently. He's not going to be able to just go out there and burn an inning like he did, you know, where his fastball got him through most situations, and he showed his breaking ball a little bit, but his out pitch was his fastball. He's going to have to incorporate pitching, and he's going to have to be more efficient with his pitches. He's going to have to help us as a starter. He's going to have to pitch us into the sixth, seventh inning. And so, yeah, that's a change, and it's a discipline that you have to develop. You have to develop that routine. You have to prepare for your start. You're not facing hitters one time. You're going to be facing them three or four times. So that's all different, and so we'll have to see. We can't predict how he will handle that or not, but we're going to give him that opportunity to see how he handles it.
You know, I watch a guy like Verlander, and he kind of builds up as the game goes. He was 92, 93 to start the game. If he's going well, by the end of the game, he's 97 to 100. Can you break down maybe the percentage of effort you gave early in the game, maybe the first three innings, if you broke them down in thirds as the game went along, or were you 100% throwing your hardest from the first pitch?
Well, I was what I call a grinder. I grinded from the first inning to the last inning. But Verlander is a good example of that. Verlander, he'll pitch at 92-93 and is very effective that way. But if he gets in a tight spot, as we've all seen, he'll reach back and pitch out of a tight jam throwing 97-98. And so he's very unique that way. There's not a lot of guys like that. You'll see guys – a touch, maybe a high velocity like 96 in the first second inning, and then you'll see them by the fifth or sixth inning, they'll be pitching 91, 92, and then you don't have the ability to touch 95 or 96 again. And so it's difference in individuals. I think that's a gift. And so most people, you know, when I look at scouting reports, scouts like the put what they have seen on the radar gun of this kid will touch 95 or 96, but you go, what does he pitch at?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll look down and he'll pitch at 90, 91. And then does he touch 96 late in the game, or did he do it early, or does he do it in relief, or, you know.
Or does he know when he can do it and when he
can't?
And
so, you know, there's a lot of variables there. And so when you start talking about upsides on kids, just because he pitches hit 95 or 96, that doesn't mean he'll ever be capable. I'm not saying he can't, but most likely he won't pitch at 95, 96. Now, there's always some upside, but what we find with our kids is that when we bring them into our system, and if they were pitching at 91, 92, all of a sudden, we turn around, once they get into our system and start throwing a lot and stuff, they start ending up throwing 89, 90. And so the velocity goes the other way instead of up. And then maybe two or three years later, and then when they get stronger and mature out, then you see their velocity increasing.
Speaking with Nolan Ryan here on 105.3 The Fan, you, Darvish, you guys worked hard at getting him here. Congratulations, you got him here. A lot of talk before he got here. Seen him a little bit now. What are your impressions thus far?
I felt like every time out he's gotten better. I think he's making the adjustment. I think he's really working on trying to keep his fastball down, not pitch his up with it as much as he probably had a tendency or did in Japan. He's shown me a very good slider. Last time out I saw a different breaking ball than that big loopy one that he throws on occasion. and I've seen a split out of him. So everything I've seen, and I've seen him go about trying to make some adjustments, which are very encouraging to me. So I've been real pleased with his spring.
I want to make sure I saw this correctly. Does he throw lefty as well?
Yes, he'll throw in between starts left-handed. And
I thought I was losing my mind, though.
He does that to keep some balance, he says. He's the only guy I know that's balanced, I guess, because I've never seen anybody else do it. But, it's kind of unique and it's kind of interesting, it obviously has worked for him.
One more question for me about the minor leagues is, I know when you came here, you talked about the philosophy of really building up arm strength, and you talked about guys 2-3 years later, their arm strength comes back to where they were when you kind of drafted them. And I know you wanted to say, hey, let's have our pitching coaches watch the guy pitch, not just click a button and say 95 pitches, I have to take him out of the game. How's that developing over the time?
Well,
here?
You know, we all have our genetic potential, and we're all capable of different workloads, and what your pitch limit might be and mine are totally different. And give you an example, Kobe Lewis is a 100-pitch pitcher. That's where he starts losing his efficiency. C.J. Wilson was a 120 to 125-pitch pitcher. They both pitched about the same amount of time in a game because Kobe was efficient with his pitches, and C.J. had high pitch counts. And so you get to the sixth inning and they're both right there where you need to be thinking about going to the bullpen. And so obviously pitch limits are different for each person, and then also who's most efficient with their pitches. So just because one pitcher has the ability to throw 100 pitches, another one has the ability to throw 125, that doesn't mean the guy that throws 125 is going to pitch you any later in the game because they're not efficient with their pitches.
You've been terrific at coming up with great numbers in terms of wins for your team the last couple of years. Would you like to share the number of wins your team's going to get this year?
Oh, I have a number, but, I haven't.
Is it between 90 and 96?
Yeah.
Is it 93?
No, I'm not going to go there, but you know my range. But, I look for us to win. I think Angels are a better ball club. I really believe that, and I think it's going to be a tough race between us and them. But I look for us to win around 95 games.
There you go. All right. Yeah. And lastly, Nolan Ryan, and we can't thank you enough for joining us here in surprise. Me being an Astros guy, watching you pitch in Houston for many, many years, I was crushed, and I wanted to get your take on Houston coming to the American League, because I know you got family Astros ties, and now joining the AL West. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I grew up being an Astro and a Colt 45 fan,
right.
And to me, they're a National League team, and that's just the way I view them. I wasn't in agreement with moving them in. I felt like if we needed to do realignment 15, then let's start taking a look at what makes sense on a realignment. We need to be in the Central, not the West. All our games out West start at 9 o'clock. We lose our audience by 10:30 during the week. And so I'd like to change that. I think Colorado and Arizona and some of those, they should be in the same division with the Dodgers or San Diego or something. So, to me, that's the way I think I would have approached it. And then the other thing is that, as far as the Astros are concerned, no, I'm glad they're in our division because it gives us one team in our time zone to play with. We won't have as many 9 o'clock starting times when we're playing in our division because they'll be in our time zone. Travel will be easier. When they get competitive again, we can have a real state rivalry there. So I see some real positive, but from being just a pure fan, I wasn't in favor of them leaving National League.
Yeah, well, it's kind of crushing me. And I'll leave you with one last question. Not you, of course, but if you could pitch past or present, one game, one pitcher on the mound, you need it. Who's your pitcher?
Oh, I would have to go with probably Holiday or Cliff Lee.
Wow.
If I wanted one game, one big game pitcher.
Why that?
Verlander would have to be in that mix.
Mental toughness?
Yeah, and just their ability to throw strikes and change speeds and show hitters different looks. And I just think those guys have track records, and that that certainly says a lot. You know, if you look at our team, if I had to pick one of our pitchers, it'd be Kobe Lewis, because Kobe Lewis gets up for that. He thrives on it, and he's been very effective for us in those games.
Well, your track record speaks for itself. The Rangers, the last couple seasons, track record speaks for itself. And I think many of the Ranger fans are absolutely giddy about what's ahead for this season, all the changes you guys made at the ballpark. Everybody's very excited.
Well, it's fun time to be associated with the Texas Rangers. It's things have really gone well, and we're excited about the new improvement in center field. We think it's going to become a destination for fans. We think they're going to enjoy it. It's going to give the ballpark another dynamic that we haven't had, and so we're excited about it. And you know, our fan base is growing, and so we feel real good about the way things are going.
Will you attempt to eat the $26 hot dog?
No.
Is it a Nolan Ryan dog?
No, it is not. You know, I would like to see a $26 hot dog, because I didn't think I'd ever see that in my life. And the only person I heard say that they could eat that whole hot dog was David Murphy.
Really?
David Murphy can eat. Now, you wouldn't think that by looking at him, you know. But he said as long as it didn't have chili on it, he could eat it.
Well, we might have to get that challenge set
you
up.
Know, that may be something we may just...
On an off day, not on game day.
Nolan Ryan, best of luck this season. Beautiful surprise Arizona Stadium, and everybody's looking forward to the opening day against the White Sox back in Dallas.
Well, thank you. We appreciate y'all being
thank
down
you so
here.
Much.
Thank you, Nolan.
All right.
Yeah.
That's
thank
Nolan
you.
Ryan
yes,
with the Texas Rangers. Elvin, friends, we will be back to you right here on The Fan.